number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
Welcome to The Stuart Knight Show, where interesting, intriguing, and exciting people engage in unscripted exchanges of ideas, stories, and perspectives. It's not an interview. It's a powerful conversation.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to The Stuart Knight Show. I have Mark Manson with me today, a guy that who I have just met now in the last 5 minutes, and I'm excited to have a powerful conversation with him today. So, Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Stuart.
Yes, it's going to be great. So for those of you who are listening, Mark is a blogger, he's an author, and he is a guy that caught my attention. Mark, I got to tell you this. It's funny how you and I are having this conversation. It's literally just a few weeks ago, you know, just doing my regular job and at my desk, and I get this woman who I haven't spoken to in a long time, a friend of mine, says, "Hey, there's this guy named Mark Manson. He's a lot like you. I just read one of his blogs, and I think you should check it out." Literally the next day, I think it was, my assistant sends me an email and says, "Hey, there's an email, there's a blog, this guy, Mark Manson, you should check this guy out." I'd never heard of who you were. I mean, with 7 billion of us on this planet, I'm sure you'd never heard who I was. And in 2 days, I had two people sending me a blog. So I always take those kinds of things as a bit of a sign. So I went and read your blog, and the one I read was the one that you had written about traveling through India. And my friend is like, "You and I are so clearly the same page." I laughed my ass off.
I'm glad to hear that, because some people read that article and they get very they get pissed off, right?
Really? what do they get all upset about?
Well, it's mostly two types. One is there's Indians, and it's and it's actually, you know, it's kind of like this blind patriotic thing,
right?
You know, they're like, "Oh, you don't know anything about India. You know, you're just a dumb American, blah, blah, blah."
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you get these kind of, this could totally be my own biases talking, but it kind of more of these hippy dippy types who did the whole karma cola, yeah, eat, pray, love, go do yoga for a half a year or whatever. And they found India to be very spiritual and awakening and all this stuff. And I'm not kind to those people in that article, so
right,
they obviously take a little bit of offense to it.
And it's funny too, right? Because these people are supposed to be so yogi and zenned out, and then I'm sure you must have got emails going, "You're such an asshole." It's like, whoa, how's the meditation going today, brother?
Yeah, obviously. It's your third eye is so open, you didn't notice the 50 starving people on the way to the yoga center.
What about, so I'm curious, how many, do you have an idea of how many people have seen that blog?
Oh, it's been, I wrote that in 2011, so it's been quite a few. I would guess, it got quite a bit of attention when I wrote it, and so I would guess by now it's probably up near 100,000, 150,000.
Oh, wow, that's great. You know, I think it's funny, because you and I believe that we have, even though we've just met here on this phone call, we've gone through the similar backlash. I mean, I've put out ideas about religion, or ideas about, you know, people being slaves to their jobs, or not doing things that they like. It's amazing how, what I say is, when you share what you believe is to be the truth, how offended people can become. You know, so what do you think that is? Why do people not allow themselves to just absorb what's being said? And to try on the clothing, you don't have to keep wearing it for the rest of your life, but just trying it on. I find that so many people can't even just try on the clothing to see if there's any sense in what you're saying.
Well, I think as authors and content producers, we actually get a little bit of a biased view, because we only hear from the extremities. I know with me, you know, I haven't gotten 150,000 comments on that post. I've gotten probably closer around, you know, 1,000 or 1,200. So, you know, 1% maybe.
Right.
And that 1% you hear from, they're either really, really pissed off, or they're really, really excited. And you don't, it took me a long time blogging to kind of figure out that there's a whole silent middle that you never hear from.
Right.
And so, yeah, that 1% or that half percent that just gets upset, gets their underwear in a bunch or whatever, like, they, who knows, maybe they're having a bad day, maybe,
right,
India is their favorite thing in the world, and it's like who they identify it. And so anytime somebody attacks them, that they just kind of knee jerk, get really upset about it.
Well, I just feel like, as a society, that we are missing out on the, I would call it a really beautiful opportunity to be able to just, you know, debate the possibility of these different truths that we're throwing out there, and to just say, hey, you know what, and just to call things out for what they are, right? Like, I had a debate with my brother yesterday about stereotypes, and my brother has his master's in social sciences. So, you know, these are the individuals that they won't believe something is true unless science has proven it. And mm-hmm. so, and if you say anything that, for example, like, you know, I said to him, well, if I were to say that if a crime is committed in the United States, if I were to say that there's a high likelihood that it was committed by a black man, I said, does that make me a racist? And he said, well, no, it doesn't make you a racist because statistics have proven that, you know, the higher likelihood is that in the United States, there's a larger percentage of black people in who are incarcerated. So that's been backed up. But if somebody says something along the lines of, I don't know, that a particular race does this kind of thing, like a particular race is going to be predominantly late, or a particular race doesn't drive as well as other races, or a particular race seems to be more geared toward going into particular programs in university over other races. You know, those haven't been proven yet, but, you know, when we go into these places, we see this with our own eyes every single day. And yet people are so afraid of that conversation, even though it could very well be true. And I think that we're just missing out on such a great opportunity.
I think it's funny you bring this up. This is actually an article that I've been wanting to write for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I think kind of the issue you're touching on here is, as humans, we easily confuse the population for the individual. So, for instance, it's not racist to say that you know, if somebody is murdered, it's likely it was done by a black person, because statistics show that that's true. Mm-hmm. But if you're walking down the street and you meet a black person and you think, oh, that guy's likely to murder me, that's totally racist.
Exactly.
And it's, I think the two things exist in two different domains. There's a population domain and there's an individual domain, and you can't apply the two to each other. So just like, you know, I could have a Mexican friend, and let's say he has some weird habit where he, you know, leaves his shoes on in the bathtub.
Right.
If I start assuming that every Mexican person leaves their shoes on in the bathtub, then that's totally racist, because I'm applying an individual event to a population of people. And then vice versa, if, you know, we find out that 60% of, you know, French people, you know, don't bathe or whatever, and then I apply that to a French person I meet, then that is also racist. So it's that crisscross of domains that, and it's funny, you see it, like, as humans, we screw it up all the time.
It's true, right? I mean, I see this in the business world, where people are making assumptions all the time about people based on an experience that they've had, let's say, with one or two people. And they end up missing out on an opportunity to do great business with somebody, or to be able to listen to their ideas in a meeting, or to, I don't know, to merge companies together. I mean, people will let so many little ideas in their head that, you're right, that are not true, just get in the way of their success. I guess the other thing, though, I think about this is that, if you say if you've got one Mexican friend who wears his shoes in the bath, but if you had, let's say, 100 Mexican friends that you had noticed who do that, and you'd never seen that with any other race, somewhere in there, I think you're allowed to start going, hey, you know what? I've kind of noticed that a lot of Mexican people wear shoes in the bath. And you realize we're going to get so many comments from Mexican people going,
I know,
who the hell do you think you are?
You guys are racist.
Yeah, two white guys. We're just setting ourselves up for pain. But, you know, somewhere I think that you're allowed to bring the subject up. And I think that where we keep missing the great debate is that you may have noticed 100 Mexicans wearing their shoes in the shower. And if you say it, so many people won't even engage you in the conversation. They'll just be like, oh, Mark Manson, he's a racist. Listen to what he just said. And I'm like, oh, once again, we miss an opportunity to debate things, you know?
Yeah. Our minds just make such shortcuts. And I mean, back with the India article, I got tons of emails from people, you know, Indians who live in India calling me a racist. They're like, you're racist.
Right.
What? Because I didn't enjoy your country? Like, I'm sorry. I didn't enjoy being there. Like, it's not...
Yeah, it wasn't personal.
It's not that I don't like you. It's just I wanted to go home. And
and that's a real human feeling you had. Why are you not allowed to have that?
Yeah, exactly. It has nothing to do with your race or anything. You could have been from Greenland for all I care. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think that we are so quick to defend ourselves in life without embracing what you might be saying. I just had a situation literally this morning where one of my speaking agencies, I haven't done work with them. I have quite a few agencies that represent me. And this one, we just don't seem to be doing business with each other. And the thing that kind of bothered me was that there was one particular agent there who I deal with, who I had asked two legitimate questions to. And in both cases, she didn't even respond to my email. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I kind of feel like if you are my agent and you're not even responding to my emails, I kind of feel like maybe we're not.
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, we're not really vibing in business here. So I just said, hey, guys, you know what? I think it's time for us to go our separate ways. Well, anyways, I think one of the owners, he emails me back, and he just went right into this whole thing about why it is that their actions were justified. And so the two complaints I had, number one was that, I actually wanted to hire one of their other speakers for an event that I was doing. I asked about his availability. She didn't respond. The second thing I'd asked was, I said, hey, I'm doing a showcase speech. Do you have any clients you want to send? No response. So he gets back and says, well, that speaker you asked for wasn't available. They couldn't do your event. And that somehow justifies not responding to let me know. And then the second thing was, is that, he said, we have so many clients who get so many requests to go to showcase speeches, we can't just send them out to everyone. I'm like, totally cool, man. Just let me know.
Yeah, just hit the reply button. Why didn't you tell me this weeks ago?
Right. It's just one sentence. It's just one sentence. And I think that this is such a classic example of people just not being able to just own a piece of information and go, you know what? I could have done better there. I could have sent an email. And instead of just giving you one sentence and, hey, you know what? We sucked there, Stuart. Sorry about that. We won't let that happen again. I'm going to instead send you a novel telling you all the reasons why we're justified in our behavior. And this is where I feel like, same thing with the Indians. It's like, just say, you know what? Actually, Mark, I kind of feel like you make a couple good points. We do have a homeless issue here. I'm sitting on three people as I'm typing this right now.
Well, and there were a number of Indians who sent stuff like that. And actually a lot of Indians they sent me kind of calm, collected, I think you're wrong. I think you got the wrong impression. Yes, we have problems here. Yes, there's a poverty issue here. Yes, sometimes it's unpleasant here, but if you had just done this, you would have seen, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually got enough of those emails to the point where I put a little note at the end of the article saying that, I've agreed that at some point I'm going to go back and I'm going to take these recommendations and give the country another chance or give it a second shot.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. So for those who are listening, and even for myself, I have this sense, tell me if I've got this right, I've got this sense that you're like this nomadic dude who just travels around the world, who writes blogs that hundreds of thousands of people read and love your stuff. And in the meantime, you also have programs that you sell on your website that help improve people's lives. And you've also got, things that you've written that that people can buy. But, have I got this right? Is that what you're doing? Are you just traveling the world and blogging, or is it just you do that for like certain months of the year?
No, I basically travel nonstop for about 5 years now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And so, of course, everybody who would be listening to this is like, how do you do it?
Well, you just described it exactly. I've been fortunate enough that I've developed a large readership that I'm able to offer courses and write books and to sustain myself off of that.
Right. So your online sales, basically that's your income. And because of that, you keep traveling and you get to keep writing. So do you find then that with your traveling, obviously you sound like you're a lot like me. You're continuously making observations of life and you feel the need to share it with people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a huge source of inspiration.
Okay.
For sure.
So what do you think about the world these days? Are you hopeful for all of us, or you think, oh God, we're going to hell in a handbasket?
I think both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. If you look back throughout history, I don't think there's ever been a moment in the world where everybody didn't think that everything was going to hell in a handbasket. But
yeah,
by every objective measure, the world is always getting better, except for maybe environmentally. But every other measure, everything is getting better. I mean, if you look at violence and wars, I mean, as bad as things seem, things are getting better. And actually, I'm in Thailand at the moment, and I can tell you, first time I came here was a little bit more than 4 years ago, and you can just see the difference in 4 years. I mean, it's everything's more developed. Mm-hmm. There's more stuff going on. There's less homeless people. It's just, you can see the development happening in the developing world. Like it's happening very rapidly, and things are getting better.
It's true. You know, I find that myself when I travel to these kinds of countries, and I'm curious if you ever feel this way. I look at these countries and I see them mimicking my country, you know, Canada or United States or many of the European countries. And they're saying, oh, you know, like we should have the same type of infrastructure or sewage systems, which is fantastic, right? But then I start seeing, of course, it's like, and there's a McDonald's and there's a Starbucks. And, you know, we're now getting into this idea of like, yes, we should have, you know, 60 pairs of shoes and we should have, you know, all these things. Do you worry that like when you see these developing countries that they're just trying to be like us and to almost eventually they're going to find themselves having the same problems in 50 years from now that we have today?
I actually don't. It took me a while to kind of realize, I think there's a difference between modernization and westernization. And
right.
I think a lot of things that you describe, you know, are kind of inevitable. You know, when you get the technology, when everybody gets iPhones and you know, fancy laptops and the internet and different sorts of fast food services, it's kind of inevitable that things will start to resemble the way they do in the West. But at the same time, I've seen enough places now. I mean, if you go to, say, Beijing or Shanghai or Tokyo or Sao Paulo or Rio, I mean, there's enough clear distinctions. They have a lot of the amenities that we have in the U.S., but they don't – they've still got their own culture and their own kind of twist to it.
Yeah,
so
good point.
I do think there's a little bit of – convergence there. And I will say this, some countries, they do look like they're just trying to mimic us as much as possible. And you can sniff those out very quickly.
Yeah, that's
true. But there are some that, you know, for instance, in Thailand, they have a very, very strong culture here that they're very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to continue to maintain that, even though, you know, in terms of infrastructure and technology, they'll start to resemble the West a little bit more and unfortunately take on some of the same problems that we take on, you know, such as materialism and...
Yeah. It's funny though, I was talking to a couple of friends of mine recently who you're right, when you mentioned Sao Paulo, you know, there's a place where, you know, slowly but surely Brazil and Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo, they're getting that infrastructure and they're getting that modernism. But you're right, they have kept their culture, because when my friends happened to be visiting Toronto this summer, we happened to be at the same concert and we didn't get to see each other, but we talked about it like a couple of days later. And it was a kind of concert where you should get up and dance, man. Like, this is shake your ass, like get into it, right? and they were, being from a Brazilian background, were doing that, and they said they couldn't believe it. They were looking around and they're like, and they said to themselves, what's wrong with these people? They're just standing watching a concert. And so you're right. They it seems like,
yeah, I know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah, you get it, right? Would you say though that, like, for yourself, coming from, you know, you're an American, where are you from specifically?
I grew up in Texas, but I lived in Boston before I started traveling.
Okay. And so have you become, I guess, with all these travels now for the last 5 years, have you become less American? I mean, do you find yourself, I don't know, dancing more or doing things that you wouldn't have done had you stayed in the States?
Absolutely. I feel like I've become kind of a cultural mutt. and it's funny because the thing that you describe, so I lived in Brazil for about a year. I've lived in Colombia for a year. I've lived in Argentina for a few months at a time. I've spent more time in South America than kind of any other place in the last 5 years. And okay. That is one of my favorite things about the cultures down there, is that basically nobody parties like they do. And it's like you take the best, craziest, most fun, most open and joyful party in the U.S. and that's like a Thursday in Brazil. and it's, I mean, I remember my girlfriend travels with me now, and she's Brazilian, and we spent most of last year in Asia, and then we returned to South America at the beginning of this year, and we went out for a friend's birthday party, and it was like within 20 minutes we were like, oh yeah, this is how it's done. Right. Oh yeah, I forgot what a party was. Oh my God, it's so good to be back. But yeah, I feel like I've kind of, because I kind of feel the same thing when I go to the U.S. now. I go out in the U.S. and it's, you know, a bunch of people standing around in a musty bar, seeing who can get drunk the fastest.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't fun. Like,
yeah, I know. Because it's like anything. Once you've tried a really nice wine, all the other wines that aren't so good, they just kind of start tasting like crap. And once you've tasted like what it's like to be out socially, where people just speak to strangers and they dance with each other and they kiss and hug, and you're like, wow, this is way better than this bar.
Totally. And it's, you can kind of, you know, there's little things like that all over the world. Mm-hmm. You start picking up little things like that in all sorts of different cultures. And I try to kind of adopt those, or I kind of see those as like as superior. So yeah, it's weird. Actually, sometimes I go back to the U.S. now. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm American and it's my roots and everything. So It feels very familiar and very comfortable. But there are a number of things about U.S. culture now that when I go back, I'm like, yeah, this isn't how I like it.
Right.
You know, I prefer to be a different way.
Yeah.
In some regards. So
how do you feel? And about that's some. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, no, it's something I like, though. I feel, because it's forced me to push and grow individually, so.
And do you feel like on any level that once you've had these experiences that on some, like I said, some level, is it your obligation or responsibility to go back to your people, in this case, the United States, and to share these experiences so that maybe on some small level you can influence that those people to get them dancing more or to get them kind of thinking about their own lives differently?
Yeah, I hate to say I'm totally unpatriotic in every way. which is it's not that I, you know, there was a period of time where I was kind of down on the US.
Yeah.
But I think that was just kind of a reaction I had to being in all these new places. I mean, these days I'm pretty neutral towards it, but
yeah.
You know, one thing spending so much time in all these different places has really shown me is that governments and, you know, it's very arbitrary. It's very arbitrary to draw these lines. I mean, at the heart of it, most people are pretty similar in what they want in each culture. And so I don't feel there are people that I love in the U.S. There are things that I love in the U.S. But I don't feel any sort of obligation towards the U.S. in any way.
Okay. It's like they'll get there when they get there, or anybody on this planet will get there when they get there.
Right. It's everywhere you go, there's problems.
Sure.
So, you know, there are things you can improve in U.S. culture. There's things you can improve in European culture, things you can improve out here in Asia. So I just try to be a positive influence wherever I go.
Yeah. And I guess your blogs are doing that anyway, right? I mean, you're obviously sharing thoughts where whether someone agrees with them or not, you are at least causing people to consider the way that they see the world and to kind of focus their energy on, you know, on maybe something new. So, and when, I'm curious, when you started all of this with this, your traveling and blogging, was it one of those things that happened as a plan? Like, did you sit down and go, I'm going to start traveling and blogging and see if I can make money off of it? Or did you say, I'm just going to go on a vacation. And while you were there, did it by happenstance, you started blogging and then people started liking it. Like, what was the order of things for you?
Oh, it was totally on accident. I mean, I didn't even plan on starting an internet business. I mean, I started a blog because my roommate thought that my drunk stories were funny and thought I should be right. He had a blog and he was like, oh man, you got to have a blog too. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's actually how it started. And then I got somehow sucked into like giving dating advice to guys. And then next thing I know, I've got a business. But I didn't really take it seriously for the first couple of years. I always kind of figured that it would just be the side thing I kind of did for fun on weekends or my time off. You know, I had a day job, and it wasn't actually until about after a year that I was like, you know, I want to see if I can make this work. I read the book, The 4-Hour Work Week, and I was like, oh man,
right.
I could travel and run this thing from all these different places. So I was young, I was debt free. I said, you know, screw it. I might as well go for it.
Yeah.
And then it was another year and a half or so after that, that I actually had built up to a point where I was making enough money that I could go live somewhere. But this is the funny thing, Stuart, is like people, they imagine it being very glamorous. It's like, oh, you start this business and you just go live somewhere. I was so broke and I was making such little money that I had to come to Thailand. Like I had to go to Argentina because it cost 50% as much to live in Argentina as it did in Boston. So
right.
it was like, oh, I got to go down there because my income's terrible. So
it's kind of funny. You were forced to travel just to be able to keep your blog going.
Yeah, I mean, the first year or so, yeah, I had to really pick. I had to go to where I had a freelance client to do some web work, or because they would pay for the trip,
right?
Or I had to pick, you know, a developing country somewhere that had a good cost of living, and
that's smart.
And that was.
I can see it being something, though. I mean, eventually, obviously, we know that you just keep on doing this and you'll get more and more people, you know, hearing about your great work. And then if you choose that you want to live in Boston, you'll be able to do it there as well. You know, it's the 4-Hour Work Week. That's a great book. And for those who are listening, it's from Tim Ferriss, who actually I was at a wedding not too long ago in New York City where Tim Ferriss was sitting next to me at my table. And that guy is such an intense dude. I mean, I swear he was looking at his food, trying to figure out, you know, more economical ways to put it into his body better than anybody else at the table. You know, it's like, I could do this. I could eat this faster and more efficiently than anybody at this table. And, but it's true, right? I think what I like about Tim Ferriss is that he questioned, I guess, the fabric of what we just believe is what a typical workday should look like. You know, of course you go to a job at 9, of course you leave it at 5, and that's the way it's going to go. And you know, then that's it. And no one really questions it, right? And I think that book is so great because it does. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about how it's a joke that I'm writing in one of my speeches. I said, you know, I'd like to meet the first person who ever stayed late at work, okay, so that I can just punch that person in the face, right? Because they screwed it up for everybody. It's like, hey, John's. Why is John still at his desk? I think he's staying after 5. Of course, the other person's like, oh, maybe I should stay after 5, and then everyone goes back to their desks, and then now it's totally acceptable that, oh yeah, you work in the advertising industry, let's say. Everyone stays till 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So you're proving, though, that there's more than one approach. I mean, do you get people like asking you how you did it because they want to do it all the time?
Oh, constantly.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I mean, it's one of those things where people will email me and they're like, how do I start a blog and make a bunch of money online and then get to travel like you do? And it's, I'm like, dude, that's like a 200-page answer.
You just sent me
a 3-sentence email. I'm like, I can't answer this on email, a single email.
Yeah,
you know. So
I get that too. I get people saying to me, you know, I'd love to have a job as a professional speaker. It seems so cool. I got all these ideas and I want to share. How do I do it? And I'm thinking, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. Okay. And I'm like, you're right. It would take me hours and hours to tell you how to do it. You know, I can give you five quick tips on how to get started, but you know, to do it, you have to do it and you have to learn and you got to get knocked down along the way and you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So what's people, one of the, sorry, go ahead.
It's, you know, one of these human nature things is we see the result and then we just assume that it's as easy as like, you know, ABC to get there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, just tell me what ABC is and I'll go do it. And it's like, no, the whole point is to get to this point, you have to have no clue what you're doing and try a bunch of things and fail repeatedly over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I get emails from people. They're like, so I'm going to start a blog this month and I want to make money off of it. What's the best thing? You know, how did you start making money off your blog? And I tell them, I'm like, it took me 3 years writing every single week. I'm like, go write 100 blog posts and then email me asking me for suggestions and tips.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, don't email before you even started. Like, go do something first.
Yeah. You know, and do you ever get this? Do you ever find yourself in situations where you'll get some random person you've never met before, they email you and they happen to catch you on a Friday afternoon where you don't have a lot on your plate and you can actually email them back. And I'll sometimes send like a pretty lengthy email with some bullet points of what they can do to get their career going. And you know, they don't even respond to say thank you. Do you ever get that?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. And then they try to argue with the advice you just gave them. And that drives me crazy. It's like, dude, if I'm gonna sit here and write you a page response, like, why are you asking me this long question with all these details? If you're not actually going to listen to what I tell you.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny, isn't it? Yeah, and they'll say, well, yeah, you know, Mark, here's the reasons why I think you're wrong on the advice that you've just taken the time to give me. I know.
Yeah.
It's
always like, but you don't understand. I'm different. I'm like, okay, then, you know, if you're so special, then why are you asking random people on the internet for advice?
You know, it's funny. One of the things I get a lot of people saying is that they'll say, well, I don't know where to start. I'm sure you get that too. Like, I don't know where to start. And I always come back and say, God, if I were to think about, you know, the last 20 years of my career, and if I were to try to think about all the things that I've done and actually think about them in one moment over coffee somewhere, I wouldn't have even started because it would have seemed way too overwhelming. And so, but when you think about just one piece of the thousand pieces, that one piece isn't so overwhelming. And so I always say to people, you know, start anywhere, because anywhere is still a place, and anywhere will lead you everywhere. And if you just start on one thing, so I don't know, just go out and make a business card. That's something you can do. Just focus on that for the week. And after you made a business card, then go out there and make 6 calls this week to people who might want your services. And then each time you do something, one thing leads to something else. And then before you know it, 5 years goes by and you find yourself in a position where you're actually doing it. This is your job
now. Yeah.
So now what's next for you? Where do you want, where are you going to go after Thailand?
Actually, we're going to Tanzania and Africa, and then we're going to South Africa.
Wow.
For about a month. And I'm very excited. It's the first time I'll be going to Africa. I've never been before.
Yeah, that's great.
And then from there, we'll head back to the States for the holidays, see the family, and see some old friends.
Do you feel when you're traveling, is there now that you have so many followers, do you feel like is it moved away from just a fun thing that you do to like, oh God, I really need to get something out today?
Actually, it's quite the opposite. You know, back when I was kind of a small-time person, well, that sounds kind of like I'm a celebrity or something.
Yeah, you're but a big back time when guy. I, back,
yeah, yeah, but back when I had very little traffic, back when I was, you know, unknown, you know, if I stopped writing for a week or two, my traffic, like 50% of my traffic would disappear.
Right.
Whereas now I have a very deep archive. I have lots of links. I have lots of people sharing my stuff. So I've actually found that, you know, if I go a few weeks without any sort of inspiration or if I get busy doing something else or I just want to take a week off or something, it doesn't affect the blog at all. So it's become quite liberating in a way. It's more stressful now because I know hundreds of thousands of people are going to read every single word I write, and that freaks me out. But at the same time, it's like, oh, I don't have to be writing all the time.
Right.
I don't have to come up with new ideas all the time.
Yeah, because you've got so much content now.
So it's a little bit easier in that regard.
So yeah, I'm curious, do you, I was going to ask you, I was thinking to myself, you know, when you're doing your, when you're actually getting out there and you're sharing your message and knowing that you have more people listening to you now, I know that you were the kind of guy that, which I think I would imagine almost every one of your, followers and readers, enjoy, is that you are the kind of person that's not afraid to, speak with a certain vulgarity, or to speak with, you know, to throw, you know, I think that swearing is an excellent way of being able to express yourself sometimes. And so, and you talk that way, whereas a lot of
yes.
writers would be afraid to speak that way. Do you find that now that you have more and more people listening to you, do you find yourself going, oh, maybe I shouldn't say asshole or whatever here? Or does it just, it doesn't even faze you?
It's funny. I had to make a conscious decision a year or two ago that it's like, I'm just going to go with this because it's how I speak in person. I guess I'm immature and I still think swear words are funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I enjoy writing with him because you can make funny words like shit giggles or, you know, clusterfuck or whatever. And it's fun for me to write like that. And I get emails every single week now from yeah. people saying, you know, you could be so respectable if you just deleted these words from your content. And I just decided a long time ago, like, you know what, this is my thing and I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah.
If people don't like it, then
that's the way. Yeah, you have yeah. to. Like, it's like, well, look at Howard Stern, right? I mean, I'm not trying to compare you to Howard Stern, but
yeah.
he's a perfect
yeah.
example of a guy that just spoke exactly how he's ever wanted to speak without any apology. And in the process, he has so many listeners. You know, one of the most interesting statistics I ever read about with Howard Stern was that, you know, obviously, I think that you don't have to work hard at being able to convince people he's a bit of a chauvinist. And I couldn't believe that 40% of his listeners are female.
Really?
Yeah. They listen to him talk about how women are basically put on the planet just to, you know, be sex slaves, and somehow doesn't seem to bother them.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, but you know, it kind of comes back to a point where, and this kind of gets at the whole point of communication and conversation, connecting with people, is you should unabridge yourself. You being unabridged, even if you piss some people off and are offensive at times or say things that people really disagree with, if you have the courage to just kind of be out there and be like, you know what, yeah, I'm kind of a pig, but
yeah,
screw it, like, this is what I think, that attracts people in and of itself. Even if they disagree with you, they like listening to you. So
yeah.
And I found that to be definitely true in my writing as well.
Yeah. I think that would be something, you know, for people listening to this right now, just there's something special there to consider the idea of, you don't have to be a blogger. You don't have to be a personality. You don't have to be on TV, to just speak freely, respectfully, but freely at, you know, that dinner party or at that birthday party or the Christmas dinner this year. Like, just don't be afraid to say, hey, you know, here's what I think. And we're all just being so careful around each other, making sure we never disagree with each other or making sure that we never say anything that might offend somebody. And in the process, I think that everybody on this planet is just missing out on an opportunity to be heard and to kind of, I don't know, contribute on some level to the human evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would rather hear honestly from somebody I disagree with than to hear falsely from somebody that I agree with.
No,
and I think most people are the same way.
That's a great way of putting it. So out of curiosity, because I know that you started out, it seemed like you were giving dating advice to men and you started a bit of a following. What was some of the honesty that you were telling men when you first started, like the advice that you were giving them?
Stop pretending.
Stop being someone else.
Everything else is kind of a derivation of that. My whole shtick in the dating advice industry, and I've kind of moved on from that, but it's, my work is still very popular in that industry. My whole thing is basically, if you're trying to perform to make somebody like you, you already lost.
Right.
And look, even if you get the phone number, even if you have sex, like, you still lost. Mm-hmm. It's eventually it's going to come back and bite you in the ass, because you've basically built a relationship, no matter how casual or serious and romantic, you've built it on a false foundation. Mm-hmm. And then I actually go as far to make the argument, kind of what we were just talking about, is that honesty is actually attractive. If right. you can be one of the few people out there, one of the few men, one of the few people in general, who is able to be completely comfortable with his shortcomings and his flaws and what he maybe agrees or disagrees with the woman about, women respect that, and women find that attractive. People respect that. People find that attractive. And right. so, it's something that is sorely missing in our culture in general, but particularly from men in our culture who are trying to find somebody.
Yeah, I guess we are. As men, we're taught on some level, all the way down from the early ages of watching Disney cartoons, that in order for us to get the woman, we have to, I don't know, show that we can jump off of a cliff and land on our feet, or beat our chest, or be able to recite poetry. And you're right; it's a big game, and it's a big play. But you're down the road, you're going to wake up, and you're not going to be sitting in that theater anymore, and you have to be a real person.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so exactly. then would you say that, like, you would even encourage a man to just, like you said, like, just be honest and just to share, like, you know, what his real thoughts are about life and everything else, and that will help him?
Yeah, I mean, so that's a starting point. I mean, obviously, it kind of gets more complicated than that. But, you know, the starting point of my book, I wrote a book, a dating advice book for men. That's basically the starting point of my book, which is, it's all about mindset. Most men approach dating from, I call it a performance mindset, which mm-hmm. is basically like, she needs to think that I'm tough. She needs to think that I'm cool. She needs to think that I'm funny. Mm-hmm. And so they will perform the behaviors that they believe will create that reaction in her.
Right.
And I argue that this is the wrong mindset, and there's tons of psychological research and information that shows that this type of behavior is harmful in other areas. And so I just kind of apply it to the dating arena. And then you reorient that mindset to basically one of simply finding compatibility. So it's, I'm going to be open and honest about who I am as a person. And if she likes that person, if she likes me as a person, that's great. I found a partner. You know, we can have romance, we can have intimacy, we can have sex. Mm-hmm. And if she doesn't, then that's fine, because then we're both better off, because we have a values mismatch.
Right.
Our values aren't aligned, and there's no sense in wasting each other's time. And actually, the rejection is benefiting both of us, because it's saving me time from having to chase a woman who's not right for me, or who's not actually who doesn't align with who I am, and trying to convince her, you know, week after week or month after month to like me.
Right, right. And do you think that that's probably one of the big reasons as to why we have such a high divorce rate, like that 50% of marriages end in divorce? Is it because of people, like, they come together and they're both putting on this big act, and then eventually it all dissipates, and then you have to kind of see the real person, and they don't like that person?
To kind of bring everything full circle, Stuart, I think in general we have, in our culture, we have a problem with authentic communication.
Right.
And that applies in all sorts of realms. But yes, it applies in the dating realm. And it's a problem with both men and women. Generally, women have different things that they're trying to show, or they're trying to perform for mm-hmm. men. And men have different things that they're trying. But it's basically it's the same principle underlying everything. And I think what happens to a lot of people is, you know, they kind of do this this do-si-do when they're dating, trying to, you know, man's trying to maintain this image of, that he is a certain thing, and the woman's maintaining the image that she's a certain thing, and they fall in love and they get married, and then eventually one day down the road, suddenly reality hits, and she starts finding out who he really is, and he starts finding out who she really is, and it's not who they thought, and it's a huge problem. And I can tell you, traveling to all these other cultures, a lot of cultures don't have this problem. They communicate very authentically, and so you don't see the same relationship problems. I mean, my girlfriend is Brazilian, and sometimes I tell her, you know, some of the problems that I used to have in my previous relationships, or that friends of mine have in their relationships, and she just looks at me like I'm crazy. She's like, "That's a problem? How is that a problem?"
Right.
And it's, but yeah, it's. I wrote a post about it. It's called the dismal state of flirting in English speaking culture. And so if people want to learn more about this, it's like a 4,000 word post that just breaks down how the all like flirting and just like are the no, how romance is communicated between men and women in English speaking culture is just completely screwed up and sets us up for very unhealthy relationships.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, you know what? That's probably a good place, since you have brought it full circle, to kind of bring the conversation to a close. Like I said before, when we first started out, before we started recording this, that I knew that you'd be one of those guys that I could talk to for 1,000 hours. And I had all kinds of, even as, you know, I still have a bunch of questions that that I'll hopefully be able to ask you face-to-face someday. But, you know, I think that you did bring it full circle there nicely, in the sense that, yeah, overall, what we've been talking about today, whether it's a cultural thing or whether it's a business thing or whether it's a relationship thing, is that, you know, the one thing I'm really taking away from this conversation is that we have an opportunity to be more authentic in our exchange, more authentic at the Christmas table, more authentic when you're blogging, more authentic to your customer, whoever it happens to be, and to know that, to have, I guess, safety in knowing that you'll be okay. In fact, if anything, it'll be better. People will be attracted to it. And I think you're proving that. I mean, here's a guy who's traveling the world, living what many would regard as the dream life, and being able to share these fantastic thoughts with other people. And because you're being authentic, it's allowing you to live that dream. So so for those of people who are listening to this, though, Mark, you know, I know that there's people who are going to want to be able to follow your work, and now I'm now one of the followers of your work. So what are the best places they can go, and what can they see when they're there?
So go to markmanson.net, and if you've never read anything of mine, there's a best articles link in the top menu bar, or you can just scroll down and check out some of the recent articles that I've written. And then I just tell people, you know, read a couple of my articles. If you like them, then there's options to subscribe or follow me on Facebook or whatever to keep up with everything.
Perfect. Okay.
If you don't like them, that's cool too. And everybody's fine. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, there'll be a few people out there, I'm sure, that fall into that category, but, that's kind of, that's part of the process for guys like you and I. We have to have a little bit of hate out there. Otherwise, we'd get nowhere in life. But yeah, no, Mark,
exactly.
This has been a great conversation. I'll make sure that for those of you, we'll put a link to Mark's website on the podcast page. But Mark, you're a real inspiration, and it's so great to talk to somebody who's so easygoing like yourself, and you got a great sense of humor. And I can tell you that I know that anyone who has been listening to this is going to be able to take away quite a few things. So I really appreciate you taking the time out. You can now go back to your, I know you have a bit of a cold, so go, I don't know. I'm sure that something in Thailand will fix that problem for you. I think it's $1. It's $1 beers.
Yeah, oh, no. I was just going to say, they probably have too much that will fix my problem here.
Yeah.
You may never come things home. I don't want.
Yeah. You'll end up getting more diseases.
Oh, gosh.
That's so great. That's why you got your girlfriend traveling with you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyways, now that we've ended on that note, seems like the right place. Thanks a lot, Mark. I hope to get to connect with you soon. And best travels to you. And keep those blogs coming to all of us.
All right. Thanks, Stuart. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, my friend.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
Thank you for tuning in to The Stuart Knight Show. We hope you've enjoyed this powerful conversation. People are fascinating, and so are you. And the right questions will prove it.